Welcome to the Locked On Cavs podcast. I'm Chris Manning. Filling in for Evan Damrell today is our new producer, Mac Robinson, the one, the only. We're going to talk about Mike Conley today in segment one and segment two. In segment three, you're going to hear an interview that Peter Bukowski on Locked On Sports Today did with the one, the only Robert Horry. So stay tuned for that. Let's get into it.
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
All right, the music you heard on the way, and at least in audio form, is from our friends at Astro Radio. Check them out on Apple Music or Spotify. I'm Chris Manning, covering the Cavs and the NBA at large for places like Diamond Up Rocks and Estimations Fear the Sword. Filling in today, you've heard him on the show a lot before. We're thrilled to have him back, but the paperwork has not yet officially been dotted. Those T's have not been crossed, but he is, in everything but name, our new producer, going to be the fill-in host extraordinaire for us, and really the third man of our team here on Lock My Cavs. It's Mac Robinson. Mac, what's going on, brother?
Brother, I'm happy to be here, man. I know that, you know, we've been meaning to go at this when it comes to the Mike Conley side of it. You know, we've made our jokes in passing, so I'm excited to finally get into it, man.
Yeah, so like, look, this is a thing that we will get into this, because Mike Conley is a name that has been written about in terms of the Cavs. I can understand the appeal. We'll get into it, but let's start quickly. I want to touch on this briefly because it's not a ton to say, and it's really just like a marketing thing for the team. But the Cavs did debut a new look on Thursday. They have the gold is back. It is the gold from really the origins of the franchise, but also that first LeBron James era. Navy is gone. They have a new logo. The net is back in the V. There's a ton of stuff they've put out about it. Daniel Ashram, the team's creative director, designed it, and they'll have jerseys later in the summer. Mac, I like this. I think the V net Cavs logo is the best logo that they've ever had. I think the best Cavs jerseys that have ever existed are any variation of the Cavs across the chest with the V. If they do Cleveland with that V, I think it'll look really nice. I'll be curious to see what the jerseys actually look like when we see them. That'll probably inform my opinion more than just this little brandery change. But this is certainly more than the Browns just like slightly changing the hue on the orange. This is like a real change of the color from like a mustardy yellow, like a Columbus Crew yellow,
yeah,
of sorts, to a more proper gold. What do you think?
Honestly, I really liked it. You know, it felt weird having kind of like the almost like a mustard yellow type of deal like previously. Now you're kind of getting back into the gold. And, you know, I know that at least like, kind of coming up with that LeBron James era and everything like that, that color scheme, I love that. And I do like the switch from, you know, the navy over to the black as well. And I just think that the mesh of, you know, like you mentioned, you know, that the V with the netting in there as well, I think that's nice to have that come back. Obviously, you know, you have the wine, the more traditional gold. I like it a lot, honestly, and I think that's going to be nice, especially. I know that some people, when they saw like some of the mock logos prior to the release, that, you know, some people weren't the biggest fans of it. But honestly, once I saw it on some of the merch and everything like that, I honestly was a big fan of it. And I thought it actually looked pretty clean.
Yeah, my take on the black is that I think the black is actually kind of a forced thing, just because I think people, it is in there because of the 2016 title and they wore those jerseys in Game 7, but like, I don't think anyone actually cares that they were wearing black. I think they care that they won. So like, I get why you do it, but I don't think it's like a color that I think is particularly like associated. I think you just go wine, gold, and white, and like really lean into that. I think you do some really cool stuff. I think black, we'll see what it looks like on the jerseys, but like, I think of like the Lakers, for instance. They have those purple and yellow jerseys, iconic. They ruined the one look of them with like the black stripe on the side. Like, let's just not do that.
Yeah.
Let's just like not like ruin a very clean, simple look. The reason the Cavs, I think, have changed their logos a lot and tinkered around with stuff is it like they don't have that iconic look, and this is like the closest thing on the path to like getting a look that actually could just like stick, that they don't have to change again in like 5 years or whatever. Like, this is not like, there's been some very bad jersey rebrands in various sports of late. This is at least like, I think, a positive change in how the team looks. And like, if I'm watching this team a lot and thinking about them, at least like the visuals in my brain will be less ugly than like the tire track jersey, like those gray like Art Deco nonsense jerseys we've had. But Mac, let's talk about Mike Conley, because he is someone, Chris Feuder of Cleveland.com has written about this. It makes sense as a trade target. Utah Jazz point guard, Ohio State product, longtime Memphis Grizzly. We'll get into this. I love Mike Conley, but he's 34, but 35 at the start of next year. Was definitely, I think, past his peak. I think there's a lot of concern if this is someone you're going to go out and give up stuff for. So, but I say Mike Conley, Cleveland Cavaliers target. What do you say? Like, what about Mike Conley? Where does that take you, I guess, as we look at him right now?
So when it comes to Mike Conley, I guess, and I want to say this, I don't think that Mike Conley is going to be the missing piece that all of a sudden, you know, puts the Cavs into that Eastern Conference title picture all of a sudden. No, but, you know, when I look at Mike Conley, I look at somebody who's dependable, and especially with what they were asking of Ricky Rubio prior to the season, and at least the beginning of the year prior to the injury, you know, I think that that's something that Conley can do and can really handle, you know, no pun intended. But, you know, at the same time, you know, I kind of looked at, and, you know, much of your recommendation, Chris, you know, I started using Clean the Glass, and, you know, was going into, you know, some of the stats when it came to Conley this past season. And
this, by the way, is why you're sometimes, Evan, just, you know, is just hearing vibes. You're like looking at the numbers. You're actually think like, just shouts to you, Mac. I'm throwing shade at Evan because he's not here, but shouts to you.
So, yeah. So, and of course, I mean, he's not here. We might as well. Yeah. But, you know, at the same time, when it comes to Conley, like this past year, 11.1% turnover percentage, that's in the 76th percentile, compared to, you know, Ricky Rubio, who is up at 14.4%, that's in the 25th percentile. So somebody can maybe take care of the ball a little bit better. But at the same time, you don't get as much of the passing. You had the assist rate of the 97th percentile for Rubio compared to 56 for Conley as well. But the other thing, too, to keep in mind is that, you know, when it comes to Conley, even when his usage rate goes up, he still is able to keep that turnover rate down. I was looking at it a couple years ago. He had his highest usage rate was in the 85th percentile at about 29.4%. And yet he was still able to keep his turnover rate at 8.5%. That's in the 91st percentile. So, you know, while still, you know, having a higher usage rate, and, you know, he's probably going to get a little bit more of that here in Cleveland a little bit. You know, last year, again, 23.6% in Utah. But, you know, maybe if he gets a little bit of an uptick, because I think that's similar to what Rubio was at this past year. I think that it was 26.5% when he was playing prior to the injury. So a little bit of an uptick for Conley this year, but I do still think that he'll be able to take care of the ball. And at that point, you know, as long as you have Darius Garland on the outside and you also have Mobley and Allen that you can mix around with, I think that he can really take care of it in that sense. So I like him from a veteran standpoint, but I understand the risk when it comes to the age side of it.
Yeah, so there's a financial side of this that I think we need to talk about as well. But I think I can very much understand looking at point guard and looking at what worked with Rubio and what really didn't work with Rajon Rondo, if we're going to be blunt about it, and what could work with Mike Conley and think, okay, this could work for us. You want a guy that can take care of the ball, that's going to keep this to release some of the 82 season game grind on Darius Garland, keep the trains moving, provide you something that you need. It makes a ton of sense. Like, this screams like something that JB Bickerstaff would want, right? Like, this feels like something that if JB Bickerstaff is thinking about this, is thinking about what he was missing, like, this feels like something he might be pushing for to some degree. And like, Mike Conley has had an incredible career. He's been very good for a long time. The fact that he's only made one All-Star team is like absolutely insane considering how good he was, but like, he just played at this very stacked position and like, it got tricky. I think you look at how his assist percentage and stuff has held up over time. I think that's an indicator that like, okay, this is a guy that still can do a bunch. He's, you know, a little bit older, had the hamstring issue the year before. It took him a little bit to get going last year, but still can be an effective player. I think looking at his age and saying 35 years, going to be 35 is where I get a little, is where like, if we're going to like look at this as something you're going to give up stuff for, and this is like kind of in talking through that, that is tricky to me because it's just, it's a little different than Rubio. Rubio is going to be 32 next year, but he was 31 when the Cavs had him last year. That's 4 years of difference. It's a different minute total. It's a different grind. You know, Conley, you know, what you're getting into the money part of this is kind of connected to this to me as well. And we'll talk about that in the next segment. But the age is the, I think if you're, this is a guy drafted in 2007. Rubio was drafted in 2011, 2012, but obviously had a more checkered injury history than Conley had. But there is, I think, when is the downturn? What can you get out of Conley going forward? I think is a fair question. Like, and especially when you to just say it, like, he's making 22.6 next year and 24.3 the year after. Good for Mike Conley, unequivocally. Good for Mike Conley. Secure that bag. Could fuel a lot of like trips between Columbus and Cleveland where this trade happened. He does have a home in Columbus, I believe. That's just like a lot of money for a 35-year-old. So after the break, let's talk about the money part. But first, I'm going to tell everyone about our friends at Built Bar. Look, Built Bar has granola bars now. They're here. They come in three unbelievable flavors. Chocolate peanut butter, chocolate coconut, and white chocolate berry. Want to try all three flavors? You can get a mixed box at Built.com right now. These are so different from the bars and the puffs. Built granola bars are loaded with granola. It's a perfect combination of crunch and chewiness. But just like bars and puffs, these babies are packed with protein and covered in 100% real chocolate. With 150 calories, 15 grams of protein, and only 4 grams of sugar, Built granola bars will change your world. They have cracked the cold to better granola. They're the perfect healthy snack to pack in your lunch, take on the road, or eat as a snack. You've been waiting for a healthy and delicious granola bar to hit the market. This is your time. Head to Built.com right now to get Built granola bars. Three delicious flavors to try. Chocolate peanut butter, chocolate coconut, and white chocolate berry. Don't miss out. Go to Built.com to get Built granola bars now. Built.com, promo code LOCKED15. Get 15% off your order. Again, the promo code is LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. All right. We also need you to do a little favor. We have a survey. Check the Lockdown survey now. Help us. Whatever your favorite parts about Lockdown podcasts are, we want to know and we want to make these podcasts better. So take our survey. Check the link below. Mac, I tell you Mike Conley has made that much money. And as a refresher, Mike Conley, 22.6 next year, 24.3 the year after. Age 35 season, age 36 season. How does that make you feel about this?
I mean, it's not great. I mean, I'll tell you that. Like, I don't feel great about handing out that kind of money. But I do wonder, you know, if there's some kind of and again, I don't know the particulars when it comes to, you know, the contracts of the NBA. But, you know, with that being
it's not quite like football where there's funny money and you can just, right, like, do some, like, seemingly, like, elite. Like, there's no New Orleans Saints in the NBA in terms of making the cap feel fake. You can't, like, just offset some money and, like, put it off to the side. Browns doing with Deshaun Watson or, like, lots of teams do with lots of money. Everything is guaranteed. You owe every dime that is on the books unless it is specified otherwise in the contract.
Well, I was going to say, I was wondering, you know, because, you know, next year in 2023, 2024, you know, of the $24 million, only 14 is guaranteed. So, you know, if there's some kind of way that you can kind of negotiate that out to split that money at that point, maybe bump up the guaranteed money in the second year, at least to make it a little bit easier to digest. I don't know. Again, I'm not sure. I'm not a capologist when it comes to a lot of this stuff. So, you know, somebody a lot smarter than me and is much better than with calculators than I am, you know, can probably get that for you. But, you know, at the same time, again, it is concerning, but at the same time, I think that at least one, what Darius could learn from Mike Conley, I think would be huge. And, you know, I know that's kind of the cliche that everybody kind of gets into, but, you know, seemingly across the NBA, everybody seems upset whenever, you know, they end up losing Mike Conley or they end up seeing Mike Conley go to another locker room. You know, seems like he's one of the most beloved guys in the NBA. So at the same time, I think he'd be a great addition. But, you know, combining that with, like you said, I mean, he's been in the league for quite some time since 2007. So he's seen a lot. And I think that you can kind of have that balance between, you know, the Ricky Rubio side of it, where obviously he can play a lot of those minutes. But I think that over these next couple of years, you can also add somebody else and maybe draft somebody to go ahead and possibly be like that backup to take some of those minutes. And you don't necessarily have to rely on Conley as much as that contract expires in a couple of years.
Yeah, so I think the last year being a partially guaranteed does make it like a little potentially different. It's still like $14 million you're committing when, you know, the Darius Garland extension will kick in and all of that stuff. So like that is a, I think still like a, it lessens a little bit, but there's still a concern there. What I think I think there's two parts about this that are tricky. Number one, how do you trade for Mike Conley? So you have to get within a certain amount of money. What are you giving up? Are you dumping Caris LeVert for him? What do you have to attach to that? Do the Jazz want Caris LeVert? Doesn't totally strike me as a thing they would need. Are you trading Lauri Markkanen? Like, what is the mechanism for a Mike Conley trade is sort of an interesting question. Like, do you do a Colin Sexton? Is this, like, if this is, like, your chip for a Colin Sexton sign-in trade for whatever reason, like, I guess, but, like, I don't know. Like, or is there, like, is it, like, Jetty and Markkanen for, like, Bogdanovich and Conley? Like, is there something to be done with those kind of pieces? That is, finding out what would make sense for both teams is sort of like the trickier part to me. If you could bring something else back with it and like move on from some of the guys you don't really want anymore, that can make some sense to me. But what the compensation is like is sort of tricky. The other part of this, I think you just think about how much money the Cavs might be spending for a point guard if they were to trade for Mike Conley. This is where I kind of like my brain is broken a little bit with this, because Darius Garland's getting a mass extension this summer and he deserves it, right?
Yeah.
What if they give Colin Sexton $18 million or $20 million? Okay. Think of, like, it's only like there's only a little bit of time where like Darius will be at 8.9 next year, so like that's not as much, but Colin will be at 20. That's almost $30 million invested in guys that are going to handle the ball. Colin's probably going to, if you're going to invest money in him, he's probably got to play some backup point to kind of make the cap kind of work a little bit. Is Conley at the cashing in your trade chips for Conley at 22? Is that like the wise way to go? And like, I could be talked into it. It's just not maybe the necessary thing I'm doing when I could say, okay, could I go get DeLon Wright for the mid-level? Could I find a veteran or thing? Could I like TJ McConnell has been someone they've been linked to in terms of trades as well. Would that as a younger guy be someone that can make some sense in just from a age and his salary is lower? Like I just wonder if that is the way you go, just considering how much you'd be spending at that position. And the age Conley's at. That's like a very like NFL way of like looking at it almost, because that's how they talk about quarterback rooms and running back rooms and all of that. But I just found myself like thinking about that and like wondering is that how you should cash in your chips when you have money for Colin coming and the Darius money coming?
Well, and that's the one thing that I do want to add here, because I haven't added this caveat quite yet. So, you know, of course I got to add, you know, mm-hmm. every little thing to make sure that if I'm wrong, then, hey, you know what? I still have this little thing.
Here's the thing. None of the moves that seem plausible to the Cavs seem, like, clean. None of these seem without risk or clean to me. Like, all of them seem to have some warts and, like, prickliness to them. They don't feel all of them don't really feel great to me as we think about them.
Well, what I was going to say is I think that when it comes to, you know, the Mike Conley move, I think that if they were to go after Mike Conley, I think that comes if you end up losing Sexton. And that's the one way that I kind of look at it, where, you know, I think that if you were to look at maybe a Colin Sexton sign and trade, and maybe if you're able to bring in, you know, a wing or something like something along those lines, depending on what you're able to get back, that's where you go ahead and look at, okay, maybe we can bring in a Mike Conley to be one of the, be that veteran presence off the bench that you can have mixed in, can kind of play on ball, you know, maybe a little bit off ball, obviously with Darius, and kind of be that veteran leader for him. So, you know, I think that that's kind of where I look at it. I don't see a scenario where you have Mike Conley, Colin Sexton, and Darius Garland on the same team. I just don't think that that really meshes all that well in general. But at the same time, you know, again, with how much they need that wing as well, I just don't see if that's a solid fit, at least. Like you said, when it comes to team building, investing all of that money into your guards at that point, I think is a little bit, it's a little bit much. So, you know, I'd be interested to see. And again, it comes down to the fact that, you know, that Colin Sexton move is that initial domino, in my opinion. You know, that's the one where, you know, I think by the time that we get to the drafts, you might have an understanding depending on what they do at that 14th pick. And I mean, how if they move off of that, or again, depending on what they kind of do, you might have a little bit of an insight as to what they might do during free agency. So mm-hmm. I think that Colin Sexton, that's the first thing. And I mentioned it with Evan when I had him on a couple nights ago. You know, it, that's that, that fork in the road, that first, you know, divide where, hey, you know what, we're either going one way or we're going another, but we're committing either way. So there's no like middle ground when it comes to it. So I think that the Colin Sexton move really is that precursor for me that would open up the Mike Conley type of idea. But even still, like you mentioned, DeLon Wright, I'd be okay with bringing him in and looking at some of these other options. I do like TJ McConnell, and I do know that he has some family around Northeast Ohio as well, so he has some ties. So he could be an interesting option as well.
Yeah, the I think that Sexton caveat is interesting just to consider as like, okay, if they do this, do they move in a different direction with Colin and catch that chip in for something else? I think if he does get moved on, you're trying to bring back something to replace something of what he provides, but also just like get something back. There's no way you can let him walk, I think, for nothing. If they do this Conley thing, I'm looking at the Rubio and Garland lineup data from Cleaning the Glass right now, because I pulled it up when you mentioned Cleaning the Glass, and I hadn't looked at this in a while. And 1,027 possessions, plus 16.2 per 100 possessions. That's when Garland and Rubio shared the floor. That's obscene. That's incredibly good. The defense was in the 99th percentile of lineups. The offense was in the 81st percentile. Rubio was so good as playing big. I'm a little skeptical Conley's doing that exact same thing because he's 6'1 and Rubio 6'4. But if there's something to playing Darius with another point guard and Conley could replicate some of that, you could talk me into this. I think I have some concerns. I'm interested. I don't think I would do it if you asked me like if I could pick plan A or plan B. It's probably not my one of those. But I'm intrigued. Mac, you've made me more intrigued in this.
I've done my job today. I've done my job. I feel like everything is right in the world at this point.
Here's the other thing is like if they like get linked to Branham, and can you imagine how hard the Ohio State shilling is going to be if they go Branham and or like get Liddell and get Conley? Can you just imagine?
Oh God, yeah. We already get the Ohio State honks as it is talking about drafting more in football. Now we're getting it in basketball. Coming at all angles, man.
Hashtag gets us. Look, as a the Ohio Bobcat person, and the Columbus thing, is my beloved Columbus crew. Not a Ohio State thing, but I get why that's a pull for some people. It would just be a very funny thing because we'd be at a game and they'd put like Mike Conley like in his Buckeyes uniform or something. You know what I mean? Like it would be an obscene thing. Mac, thanks so much for coming through. Tell everyone they can find you on social, and what else you have going on right now, buddy?
Yeah, so you guys can follow me on Twitter at MacRobinson95. That's where I put most of my updates and, you know, mainly just social media jokes, whatever it is. But, you know, between that and then I'm actually going to be hosting on The Fan this Sunday on the 6th from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. So be sure to tune in then, and I should be hosting in a couple of weeks as well. So make sure you follow me to keep up with that as well.
Yeah, check out Mac. Check him out on 92.3 whenever he's on. Again, he'll be on here producing, popping in as the man in the virtual booth, so to speak, as we're doing this, and co-hosting with one of us when someone else has to take a day off or we're traveling for our day jobs or whatever it is. But we're really excited about it. Can't Mac. I'm glad we have like officially like put you in our little team. I just want to say this right. I adore you. You know this. I'm very excited that you're with us, and I'm very excited to build this up as the summer goes along.
Yeah, man. I'm super excited to be here. I know I've told you this before. I've said this on the podcast before, but you know, as somebody who's been a longtime listener of the podcast too, and you know, enjoy both you and Evan's work. You know, I'm glad to be on with you guys. I'm glad that I can help out.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. All right, quick break. Peter Bogoski interviewing Robert Horry after this. NBA champion, Big Shot Bob. You know you want to listen to Big Shot Bob. I mean, come on. How can you not? So check that out after this. The Locked On Ultimate Mock Draft is coming, so check that out. Mac, do you have anyone you like at 14 if they keep the pick?
You know, I'm hoping for Jalen Williams at this point. I'd love to see.
The fast rising Jalen Williams.
Yeah,
okay.
Hey, you know what? And he's probably not going to be there, so I can't be disappointed if they don't take him.
Hey, well, he might be. We'll see. We'll see who they end up with. It could be Branham. We'll see. I have a funny feeling it's Branham's. The Branham thing is going to be interesting, but that's a whole other podcast. We'll be back next week with more Locked On Cavs. Until then, everyone, be well. Here's Robert Ory with Peter Bukowski.
The Golden State Warriors are minus 150, the favorites in the NBA Finals against the Boston Celtics. Joining me now, Robert Ory, seven-time NBA champion, is here courtesy of Bet Online. Check out Bet Online for all the up-to-date lines on the NBA Finals, Finals MVP, Finals props, and each and every game line. This is great to have you here. Why do you think, because the line has moved a little bit in the Celtics' favor, why do you think there are people that like the Celtics matchup against the Warriors?
Because the smart people know defense wins championships. Mm. And if you look at the Celtics team, they got two players on that team that made the all-defensive team. You know, Smart, of course, defensive player of the year. But Robert Williams is one of those guys that is an eraser. He can block shots. He can, you know, he can erase a lot of mistakes that you make on the perimeter. And you think about it, you got Brown, Tatum, and Smart, who can get up on people defensively and funnel them to that guy. Next thing you know, he's getting blocked. And if you look at the way, you know, Horford has been playing, he's turning back the hands of time. He's blocking shots again. So if you, overall, I think that the Celtics is a better defensive team than the Warriors, because even though you have Draymond Green, Klay Thompson is not the Klay Thompson of old who can do the things he used to be able to do. And so I just think that's a big key for them, for the Celtics, that is.
How do you see defensive player of the year Marcus Smart matching up with Steph Curry? Is that going to be something where you see that Marcus is going to pick him up 94 feet? Like, how do you think Smart is going to approach that assignment if he does get that assignment, which we assume he's going to?
But you know what? I don't think it's going to be a one-man job. If you look at the Celtics, they 1, 2, 3 are all athletic guys. And you go to the 2, Jaylen, and go to the Tatum, they get taller. You know, it's like, yeah, like the bars on a cell phone. And I think even though they like to do a lot of switching, I think they're perfect for this matchup. It's a perfect matchup for the Celtics and when they got the guard. And because, you know, Klay is going to be constant moving. And so, sort of, you know, not the same as a Jimmy Butler or Tyler Hero, but I think this, what they just did against the Heat, is like a prelude to what they're going to do. And so I think they're going to be fine defensively switching and getting ready for Steph.
It sounds like you like the Celtics in this one.
You know, all my Laker fans are going to be mad at me because they said you cannot wear anything green and you can never root for the Celtics. I'm not rooting for the Celtics. You know, I would like to see my former teammate, Ime Udoka, win his first championship. You know, so I would like for that to happen. But, you know, I just think being the basketball mindset, I just think that there's a good chance the Celtics could win this thing.
All right, so we have some odds here. Celtics in 6 is plus 375. Celtics in 7 is plus 650. If people are going to bet on it, what is your prediction? If you like Boston, 6, 7?
Hey, you know what? If you try to make some money, right? that's why you gamble. And so I will go with the Celtics in 7 because I think the Celtics have been a battle-tested team on the road. They've won a lot of games on the road. They just won the Eastern Conference on the road. And so I think they're ready. Not saying everybody would say, well, the Heat is a different monster than, you know, the Warriors and blah, blah, blah. But I still think it all boils down to having confidence and playing well on the road and believing that you can win on the road.
There's also been this discussion now, especially among Celtics fans, about what this Celtics team has had to face, particularly who Jason Tatum has had to face. Kevin Durant in the first round, Giannis Antetokounmpo in the second round, Jimmy Butler on a heater, no pun intended, for Miami. And now Steph Curry, you're talking about at least 3 Pantheon guys who are all time great players. Who do you think has the most on the line legacy wise in this series? For whom would that one title, you won 7, who would that one title mean the most for?
You know, I'm going to go off script a little bit and I'm going to stop people from thinking this is going to be the greatest run ever by the Celtics. That's not true. Because you got Hornacek, Karl Malone, you got Kevin Johnson, Charles Barkley, you got Dennis Rodman, MVP, David Robinson, then you got Shaquille and Penny. Now, that is the greatest run back in 95. So when people say this might be the greatest run, stop it. You know what I'm saying? Because all these teams was 50, you know, 55, 50 plus win teams. And so I just think if you look at this game and you have to pick an MVP, you know, of course, it's going to be Tatum, but this run that the Celtics are on is incredible. You know, don't get me wrong, because they've been able to win on the road, which is key, because you have to win on the road in order to win championships. That's if, unless you have home court advantage and you protect your home court. But I just think overall, when you look at the makeup of these two teams, they're similar. You know, Golden State Warriors, they were the Celtics 6-7 years ago when they first entered the playoffs. And nobody thought they could win a championship. Next thing you know, they win a championship. Then the following season, they win all these games and don't win a championship. And then they get KD and they win two more. But I think if you look at the Celtics, there are so many similarities with these teams that people are always going to say, oh, let's go with the veteran leadership. Let's go with the fan favorite and Steph. You know, this thing about it, because everybody wants Steph to win, because we know he got robbed one time with the MVP in the finals. And then he took a step back and let KD come in to his team, which is Steph's team, and take two MVPs. And so I do think Steph has a lot to prove. And his legacy is on the line when it comes to this, because, you know, all the chatter now is about him not having an MVP in the finals, which we all know he was robbed of one. So let's be real about that.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at these MVP odds as you're talking about the MVP, and we expect Curry and Tatum right at the top in terms of the odds. You're not getting really good value there. I'm looking at Jaylen Brown, 10-1. Yeah. I'm looking at Draymond, 22-1. Like, if he really turned it up defensively, people forget in that game 7 against the Cavs, he had a triple double in that game. He was the best Warrior on the floor in that game. I'm looking at Marcus Smart at 40-1. It seems like you can get some good value. And we've seen, including in this Warriors run, that it's not always the stars who win these finals MVPs.
It's true. You know, for me, if I wanted to take the odds, I'm going to eliminate the top three automatically. And I don't think Klay is, you know, Klay is a game 5, game 6 type of player. But me, I would go with Andrew Wiggins. If I had to pick someone with the odds, I would go with Andrew Wiggins, who is 20-1. And think about it. He has started to come into his own.
Yep.
He, after that dunk on Luka, all of a sudden this dude is smiling big. He's enthusiastic. He's playing hard, and he's an all-star. And I think some people forget he was an all-star. I think this is a good way, in the biggest stage, to show everybody that the all-star committee didn't make a mistake. So if I had to take all the, because I don't think Draymond Green, he doesn't shoot enough, and he's going to have to guard too many people, so he's going to be all over the board. That. So if you look down that list of people and you want to say, oh, odds maker, for me, I would take Andrew Wiggins 20-1.
That is, that's bold. I love it. I think you're right that he seems to be a different player. Just in the Warriors, just in Golden State, he seems to have been unlocked a little bit, whether that's Steve Kerr, whether that's just him feeling more comfortable. We're talking about legacy. And you have been on some teams that have gone on these multi-year runs that have been what we might consider dynastic, right? There have been some discussions here. If the Warriors win one, that because it's the Klay, Steph, Draymond core with Steve Kerr, that this has to be considered part of the Warriors' run and that we have to call them a dynastic team. Where do you fall on that discussion? If they win one, are they a dynasty?
You know what? It's I will put them in that category as a dynasty. You know, because they was riddled with injuries,
right?
2 years, Klay was out and Steph went out. You know, you say, okay, we'll give them a Phil Jackson asterisk by those 2 years. But if they were to get back to the mountaintop and win this year, I would put them, you know, you got one more step to be a dynasty. And then if they go to the finals again, then I would give them a dynasty. But, you know, think about this. They gave us a dynasty in the Lakers. We won 3 in a row. And next thing you know, they dismantled a team. They go back and lose. It's considered a dynasty. So, you know, to me, there's only been, you know, 3 dynasties in this: Bulls, the Celtics, and the Lakers, because they're in a situation where they went 6+ championships. You know, that's what you look at. But in this day, in this era, you can give them a dynasty.
I would consider the Spurs, the Tim Duncan, Greg Popovich Spurs in that mix, but they never won back-to-back titles. And so it depends on how you want to qualify it. Sustained success, not always enough. I think if you're a Boston fan, you're going, why can't we have that sustained run? We've got these two young superstars, Marcus Smart, defensive player of the year, who's coming into his own a little bit defensively. It seems like they've unlocked some things with him as their pure point guard in initiating offense, because he doesn't have to create for everyone. They've got Tatum and Brown who can create for themselves. I mean, what do you think the chances are that they could be not the next dynasty, but the next team that you have to deal with in the Eastern Conference? Like, okay, they're going to be there every year until further notice.
You know, I think you look down that line and you says, okay, Tatum, first team, max. Brown, max. Smart, max. These are super max contracts these guys potentially can get. Right. So now, if you, since I cover the Lakers got $40 million guys, $40 million guys. They can't get nobody else on the team unless they do some hell of a drafting, and they get those guys that's going to be there. But it boils down to payday, man. If you're going to stick around and get paid, or you're going to have that one falter and say, we didn't win a championship, we need to make a move because, they exploited us in this area. We need to get someone in, and they trade one of those guys. People do dumb things like that. Well, GMs, I should say. So I think they have the potential to make a long run. They're just going to have to stick together and do what a Tim Duncan would do and say, I'm going to take less money. So you can sign a Tony Parker, you sign a Manu Ginobili. But are these guys now, selfless enough with this, say, hey, I don't want to make $40 million. I make $30 million. I don't think so. I think every guy now is trying to get their bag so they can say, at one point in my career, I was making 50, 40 million, whatever it may be. So that's going to be the key though. It boils down to money. If they can keep that team together.
All right. Not a finals question, but I can't talk to Big Shot Bob and not ask you this question. Which of your big shots is your favorite?
I grew up a Lakers fan, a huge Magic Johnson fan. And one of my biggest thrills before I even made it to the NBA, I got to play one-on-one with Magic when I was being scouted by the Lakers coming out of college, coming out of University of Alabama. So the shot I made against the Sacramento Kings in 2001 to win that game is probably my favorite. And don't get me wrong, I love what I did in Houston. I love what I did in San Antonio. But everything I did in San Antonio was on the road, game 5 on the road. But this was at home in Staples Center. And the ego comes into play where you want to hear that crowd chant your name, man. And you run off the court and the crowd still chanting your name. You in the locker room, you can still hear them chanting your name. So I think that shot, it takes over all the other shots just for the ego. We all as athletes got some type of ego. And I think for me, that just takes over because I had the Laker fans chanting my name. They wasn't chanting Shaq. They wasn't chanting Kobe. They were chanting Ori. So that's a big plus for me.